Come on, people. It's time to live it up.
Hi, this is Rosemary Rodriguez, your host on the director's chair at weplayradio.com. For those of you just tuning in or possibly for the first time, the director's chair is the place to talk about directing, producing, writing, and anything to do with collaboration, when it works, when it doesn't work. I'm a filmmaker and a TV director, and one of the shows I just wrapped up season two of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, where I had an awesome pleasure of working with a funny, intelligent actor on the show, John Ailes, who's also a fantastic photographer, writer, documentarian, producer. Right, John?
I think you have to keep busy is the point.
Okay, good. So how's it going, John Ailes?
Awesome. Back in Los Angeles.
How's that feel?
It's good. My family's here and all my friends and I grew up here. But I definitely love taking a few months off and going to New York and shooting.
Now, do they come and visit you? Yes. One of the things that comes up a lot is people working in one place, living in another, and that we think it's all so glamorous, and then it's hard on everybody.
It's lonely.
That's something that comes up. It's lonely, right?
Well, I mean, that's especially on a longer job where, you know, you have less actual days of work where you have to keep yourself busy. Luckily, I have lots of lines of interests that keep me busy and stuff. But no, I mean, in fact, this time was the first time that we stayed in Brooklyn. The last time, every time I've ever gone to New York, I stay in Manhattan because I know Manhattan. That's where I sort of gravitate toward it. But this time I stayed in Brooklyn and it's interesting. It's a kind of place where people actually don't come and visit you very much.
They don't, right? But what part of Brooklyn? I mean, the shoe show.
I was right on the other side of the river. I mean, I could see the city from my bed, from my couch. I was in Williamsburg. Which is incredible. I mean, what's happened to all of Brooklyn is incredible, but what's happened to Williamsburg is just mind-blowing.
But a lot of people, I guess most of your friends live in Manhattan, since you're saying they're not coming out to Brooklyn.
Yeah, or in Jersey. I mean, coming to, it's okay. Funny, it's right there. It's one stop out of the city. But people do have there's a psychological line across that river.
I think there's a lot of people, it depends on what generation. If you're our generation, it's like, because I live in 100th and Lexington, so I'm still like, okay, I got to go out to Brooklyn to see you.
Right.
But then younger people are like, really? I have to go into Manhattan?
It's true.
I know, because they're
it's
all
true. They
about
prefer
Greenpoint
to stay.
And Williamsburg, and I that's know. The way it is. So we're in Glendale, which I had never shot anywhere before.
No, Archie Bunker's house is there in Glendale. Did you know that? It's like blocks away from where
that.
We were. Yeah.
Nobody told me. Nobody showed me.
I mean, you talk to anyone who grew up in like there or River Ridge? No, what was the... buddy grew up right near
Brooklyn
there.
Or Queens?
In Queens.
Archie Bunker
Queens.
Was from Queens. Oh.
Very much in Queens. Glendale, Queens. Glendale, Queens.
I thought we were in Brooklyn.
No.
Oh, snap. Yeah. I didn't even know I was in Queens.
That's why there are so many cemeteries.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Queens
I did notice the
cemeteries. Famously full of cemeteries, or
Got
at least
it.
Where we were.
Okay, I didn't know.
You
know
in fact, if you're looking at a map and you're looking at Glendale, Queens, you're looking at a big swath of green where we were because it's almost all cemeteries along
right.
the edges.
Everywhere you look, there's cemeteries.
Yeah.
I know.
But
they're
cool.
Vast.
That's a place where, again, like that town hasn't changed a lot. There's no public transportation that takes you there. So you are a resident. You live there and, you know, it's very much a community that isn't going to change for a while, I don't think.
Is that where you shot the first season also?
Same no, time? We were in Greenpoint. We were in Greenpoint, very industrial kind of chunk of like old warehouse buildings.
Yeah,
cool stuff.
Yeah. No, that's but there's more stuff shooting in Greenpoint.
So much.
Probably
I mean,
so
New
much
York
that you
has.
Couldn't go back there.
I think our timing was off this time.
Yeah. So when you're out there, there's all these cemeteries and stuff. So so you do shoot a lot. You shoot on set a lot.
We do.
You're a great photographer. I checked out your website, johnales.com.
Yeah, please feel free. That's an old, I haven't changed a whole lot of that photography. That's what photographers say all the time. But it's true. I haven't added any photography to that for such a long time because of social media.
But you can tell that you have a great eye. I think that's the point.
Oh, thank you. Like, thanks. That's kind of, I think that's what it's there for, is just to say, hey, you know.
Well, you really catch people spontaneously, and you have some, you know, you have like a section of kids, which are really cute. Uh-huh. And then you've got like some celebrity stuff, and you've got like Al Pacino on there and Robert De Niro on there.
I do.
And you've got a great John Leguizamo photo on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you, and I looked you up and I saw that you've been on set photographer.
Only a few times, but I got lucky enough, as an actor, I always... shot if the project was friendly enough, let me do that. That's right. There's a fine line where, you know, in certain projects you'll find that actors and directors and DPs, camera guys, all women too, share that little hobby where mm-hmm. people are shooting a lot. So there were a couple of lucky experiences, mm-hmm. one in Missouri, one in Slovakia, a couple on little movies, a couple on a TV show I did where I was welcome to shoot. And then the director or the producer would see it afterwards and say, hey, that's interesting. And one of those directors hired me for a non-union movie that became union. So I did end up joining the Cinematographers Guild and then did a few movies. But I have to tell you, it is as competitive a field as
I'm
it
sure.
is to act.
Well, you see the same guys around for years.
Right. Like, and there's on only shows. One person on each set.
Right.
And
it's
there are many actors.
It's a great job.
It is a great job. So and you're an island for
are
sure.
Are all of the shows that you, or movies too, like that you were shooting, did you have parts in all of those mm-hmm. movies?
Yeah.
Oh, so you did both.
Bara Grant and Brian Riley, Bara the director, writer, had hired me as an actor. They're husband and wife. Brian has since passed away. Incredible producer, great friend, awesome dude. Bara is the director and writer. I was an actor on that show. Mm-hmm. And I came up with a cool catalog that I ended up shooting the credit sequence for that movie.
Oh, cool.
In still photography. Just as
Which
a
they
project.
Didn't plan. They just
they
did
asked
it
me to do it in the end because they saw it. I had a lot of stuff that was already leaning that way. And they said, can we go do a night at bars and do some stuff? So we ended up with a pretty cool title sequence. And then they hired me for the next movie. They hired me with a part that got cut. So I didn't actually get to act at all. I just shot on it.
Got it. No, but I mean, that's one, if there's one piece of advice that I would give to directors out there, all directors and all producers, which is make sure to hire an on-set photographer.
Well, that's true.
Do not take it for granted. Because I know sometimes, like, I do some independent films, and it's like, it can get shortchanged.
Well, an independent films
later.
Especially.
I know.
In this day and age, you can find someone who's willing to do it for a song.
No. Forget those, like...
No. I mean,
it has to be somebody good. I'm just
right,
saying.
Right, but then they cut the hours down on that poor person. And, you know, I mean, in the real independent world, you know, that's a, they're gonna shorten those days up for sure on the on-set photographer.
I feel like even if you have to pick specific days where you know certain scenes are important or you have the whole cast, I mean, same thing you do on a TV episode, right? But like,
right.
I feel like it's something that because, you know, so much stuff is shot digitally, it's like, oh, we can always pull a frame.
Oh, that's the worst thing.
That is a nightmare. That's just a false thing and it shouldn't be done. And I've been guilty of that.
I hear you. Those are, you know, and I think that may be another reason why on-set photography doesn't get the love that I would because I think what the on-set photographer does is document the experience of shooting the film rather than just the frame of the scene. The frame of the scene is often used for selling, but the BTS stuff is really what makes us interested in looking back in history.
Absolutely.
On, you know, Spencer Tracy working on set with, you know, whomever.
No, it's really fascinating. That's what some of your photos do. And, you know, it's weird because, you know, I've been directing so long. I can remember having a manager who told me when I did Rescue Me with Dennis
Leary,
right?
You did a few.
I did like three of them. But when That's I did, when cool. I did it, I remember I had a manager who had gone away to some seminar somewhere, some like Twitter thing, or like it was about social media or something. And this is like 6 or 7 years ago. I've only recently got on this stuff because of a movie that I have coming out. So I was like, I'm sure I'm going to sit on set and tweet about Dennis Leary. Like, sure, that's going to get me far, right? And then I was just like, oh, wait, but now it's a different world. A few years later, especially. Where it's like everybody, like
even a year
encouraged
later,
to do that.
Even a year later, the vibe of sharing this material.
So much more open.
It's even more like, when will you start? The network, the studio, everyone wants you to. It actually keeps the vibe alive.
Well, I think it's interesting because it kind of becomes like you end up having direct communication with people that enjoy the stuff that you're shooting.
Very much.
And they're watching it. And people are really smart out there. Like, there's people that notice shots that I've done or this and that, and they'll comment or like, you know, because the last episode I did of The Good Wife was my last episode, and the last one, you know, for the one I was going to be doing, the series just ended, right?
Right.
So I found myself like, okay, I'm going to be like a set photographer and I'm going to shoot the crew.
I'm going to shoot the sets.
I had the most fun. It made me want to be doing what you're doing all the time.
Well,
but
that
I'm just
is my,
with this. I don't I have a real camera.
I know. Well, you could, and you could turn that into a real camera now.
I could. But I just want to say, because there was like, I took pictures of the dark sets.
Right.
And I combined them. And there was like a little walker. Right? An old lady walker that was on one of the sets, like tucked in the corner. I remember like someone on Twitter was like, hey, what's up with that walker on set? And I was like, oh, that was a part of an older woman who came to the party, but her part got cut. So like she would have known that. I don't know. I got a kick out
that's
of like
nice.
Sort of revealing that and that somebody noticed.
That's my joy of shooting while I'm acting, because I don't know. Not that being on the glass side of the camera all the time makes me do this, but I have a compulsive way of shooting. Like, I shoot everything that's on my side of the kit, right? I like to shoot toward the crew and everyone working, because to me there's really beautiful light that falls off. People look incredible when they're working and they are good at what they're doing, because they look so confident and find themselves in really beautiful situations all the time. It is my joy to shoot around that part of the set, and it rarely gets exposed anyway, so.
Well, and also, cool. Let's just say crews don't really get their due.
Well, that's for sure.
So paying homage to them and paying attention to them, and like, it's a way of saying thank you for your hard work.
They definitely love seeing pictures of themselves on set that they didn't expect that they were in, too, because
And they do take great photos.
They're beautiful people.
I mean, incredibly
beautiful people. Look, I love our crew is really awesome, and they're also fantastic looking. So
they are. Yeah. They're all around. They're awesome. So good. So okay. So I was gonna ask you about, like, besides the other, you know, you've been in a ton of TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been everything from Law and Order SVU to Ray Donovan to Burn Notice to Mad Men. And then I was just asking you about Fantasy Island, and you were just telling me it was this updated Malcolm McDowell version. I don't know how updated now.
It's almost 20 years ago now, 15 years ago. But no, that's true. It was certainly not the Mr. Rourke of Ricardo Montalban, but rather Malcolm McDowell. Was it Louis Lombardi who, I think he was in the movie Traffic, and he was this kind of really cool Italian thug kind of dude, New York dude. But he was in Fantasy Island. They shot it on Waikiki.
So you had to go down there and work.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
A month.
That's awesome.
Which was really great. And it was produced by Barry Josephs and Barry Sonnenfeld for ABC. And Bill Smitrovich was this great, he played this great ghost. It was a really cool vibe, very dark show, and they only did a season of it, but that's funny that you asked about it.
Well, yeah, because I was looking at all these things, so I was just wondering, like, is there like a pattern of things that you get cast? Like, is there any kind of roles that you always get sort of put into, or no? You're like all over the map, right?
I don't fit in any particular box. I'm certainly a character. I would certainly attest to the fact that I've never done a love scene. That makes sense. Not being really a leading man, but I am growing into more.
So, like, you feel like, character actors don't really do love
they don't
scenes.
Very much. I mean, I guess they end. I could probably, someone's going to, you know, probably give me a list of 20 right, character right. actors who are doing love scenes, but I'm imagining they're either funny or violent or odd or uncomfortable.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever.
Or it's comedy.
Exactly.
Something crazy.
So I have never done any, and I've been in a few things. But
so between the TV, all the TV right. shows, right, and the movies, Nutty Professor,
right.
Ride with the Devil.
Right.
So you've worked with, you know, Tom Shadyac.
Right, Tom Shadyac,
you
Ang Lee.
Work with Ang Lee. So like of right. all the directors, Barry Sonnenfeld, all of these, is there like a difference, do you think, between feature directors and TV directors?
Yeah, I think. Well it's been
yeah.
a lot. Yeah, well.
Tell me. I want to know. I'm curious. I've never asked anyone that question, by the way. It just came to me today.
I think process is different. I mean, it depends on if you're the director. You know, I always find your position as a director coming into what is already an established and small and tight-knit group to be a difficult job, which you handle right. very, very well. It's a tough...
That's nice.
Well, it's tough to fit into this
it
group.
It is, and here you are.
And
but I love crew and I love actors.
Well, there you go.
I know. It's easy.
The feature experiences I had... I've only been in a handful or a couple handfuls, but it seems like there's more of an ownership of the film because they're either writing it or they're directing it or they're, you know, and the director in this case is really a ringleader in television that where you have a crew that already works together in a certain way. You have a style and a vibe that you have right. to, I think that in some ways you have to be, true to
right
and mostly you have to be very good at telling the story in your own particular way, which, you know, luckily
no matter which
right
no matter
in either case you have to fit into, you know, that position, which is a leadership position. I mean, it's certainly the executive position on the set where you're making decisions split second all the time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I feel like I do feel like I own my episodes.
That's
awesome.
But
I don't know if that's like not the right thing to say. But at the same time, I feel like I own them, but I'm like trying to be of service to whoever created that show or whoever.
Right.
Like, because I show up and I've done all my homework.
Right. Right.
I've read everything. I've watched everything. I've studied.
Right.
I've done all of it. So like I show up and I'm just like, okay, I know. Like on our show, it's like Dennis's show.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but you've directed a feature as an auteur as well,
yes.
where you've created the whole idea.
Yes.
And you step in and you do it.
Yes.
And
that's heaven.
Okay. But isn't that interesting? Because that's in some way where Dennis is, and he has to leave off the directing to you because this is really his vision. We're all
yes.
there serving his vision.
Yes,
I don't
yes.
know if,
yes.
I mean, you do definitely have to own it as a director because you have to say, no, this is how it's going to be right now. Otherwise we'll never get the shot. But in Dennis's case, like I look at him and this is like, you really have to realize his vision. So that's interesting, but you've experienced both sides of it because you have been the auteur where all
yes.
decisions are serving your
well,
vision.
Well, I did that first.
Right. That's what
I made
right.
a movie first.
Yes.
So I don't really know how to go in and not own the episode.
There you go. Uh-huh. That's
but having
good.
Said that, what's great about being around for a while like we have is that you get to take jobs with people that you know their work, you love their work. So
you trust
then,
each other's style,
but
their
you don't
eye.
Always, they don't always know me, right?
Okay,
whoever's hiring me doesn't
right.
really know, but I know them or I know their work.
Right, right.
So like
right.
Dennis happens to know me. So I usually at this point, thank God, I'm not supposed to make noise, but I'm going to knock on wood. Okay. I get to gravitate towards shows and people that I respect and I love. And I think that I can do justice to what they want because
right.
I understand them and they have great taste.
Well, I guess that's what your gift as a director is having the confidence that you're going to deliver
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just all instinct. It's grace and instinct. I have no like knowledge of it or how to articulate
fortunate.
It, but.
Because it's a great job, I imagine.
It's a great
I've
job.
I've never had it.
It's a great job. So that was something
right.
I wanted to ask you because you have such a great eye.
Thank you.
And because you're so involved in telling the story behind the scenes and in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a great actor.
Thank
like
you.
I had such a good time working with you
and
Robert Kelly, like such a good time.
We have a joyous duo.
You guys are so great together.
Thank you.
I mean, and I can't wait for our episodes. I really love like the sort of roller coaster that you guys are on.
We have we're grateful to Dennis for, you know, conceiving C or D story or whatever. It actually is an arc of 8 episodes. Our story goes for a long time. So I don't even know what you call that story, but we certainly have an escapade that no one even knows is coming, which I feel is kind of cool. The rest of the cast doesn't know what we did. We have no idea what the cast did because we, you know, Bobby and I worked 2 days a week together and then the rest of the cast was off.
They're all doing their things. I know. So it's all going to come together.
We'll see what happens.
I know.
I can't wait. I love my cast.
But have you ever wanted to direct?
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, I think I have created that position for myself more as a producer who can combine elements, visual elements and storytelling elements, and sort of be a ringleader for directors. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, one of my creative partnerships is with Hank Azaria. Mm-hmm. We met as actors together in Slovakia, where, again, that was one of the shows where photography was very important. But Hank asked a couple of years later if I was interested in telling a story about fatherhood with him.
Right.
Yeah. And he is the director on this, you know, journey that we've been on. But he also has faith in me to tell the story visually, to assemble a team around us who can provide us with excellent editorial support, excellent music, people who have our like, you know, minds.
Right, which is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically I've never put myself out there for my own position in that case to be a director, but I've fallen into really good partnerships where I'm a creative guide.
So fatherhood was something that you produced and Hank was in and you interviewed different people. It's like shorts, right?
Like it started as a feature doc, kind of like what he was playing poker with some buddies. His other buddy who was at the game, they were telling stories and he said, you know, you're all fathers. I always hated kids. I hated myself as a kid. I have no interest in having kids.
Right.
But it would be if Katie, his then girlfriend, if Katie came to me and told me that she were pregnant, I would follow you numbskulls around and basically like take lessons and figure out what it is to be a father because it's not appealing to me. So the idea was trail his friends who are fathers and talk to them about it. Of course, a year into shooting it, his girlfriend gets pregnant. Okay. And then of course, while we were shooting it, his girlfriend and the baby comes 10 weeks early.
Oh, wow.
So now we have a premature baby and we're in the ICU with the baby. And it really kind of launched a whole chronicling his fatherhood experience and talking to Mike Nichols and Kevin Bacon and Bryan Cranston about it. And that was the joys.
Mike Myers.
Yeah,
a bunch
really
of people.
Great people we talked to. And their perspectives are all, you know, not exactly what you'd think they would be. They're incredible. All the stories are great. So we had a blast doing it. We might do more. We're doing other projects, but that one might another season
well, that's
happen.
Cool. I mean, you could do a whole bunch of subjects like that.
Yeah, we have a bunch of
thoughts.
We have one that we're working on right now on fame with him, which would be a really cool.
Fame.
Yeah.
That's a good subject.
Yeah, and he has a great take and his friends have experience.
Awesome.
You know.
So that'll be fun. So maybe you'll officially be directing some of those.
I think it'd have to be. I would like to direct something narrative.
Okay. You have ideas?
I did a lot of writing but I'm a partnership kind of person.
Got it. You like to collaborate.
I do like to collaborate.
That's what this is all
about. Well, I tell you.
So maybe with Hank, you'll be collaborating or you have somebody else that you write with.
Right. I write with other people.
Got it.
I never found, I was just listening to Andy Samberg talking about this. But when he was very young, he found two guys who have his sensibility and they keep gravitating toward each other because the best work they do is with one another. And I don't think I've ever found my partner in that way.
Right. Me neither.
Is that right?
Yeah, no, like one person. I always feel like, oh, that director who, you know, look, I've been married for almost 24 years.
Right.
So I got that one check.
I have a check on that.
And that's like awesome.
Right.
But that other like, oh, where's that producer that
I'm
in the long haul with? Or, you know, writer that like, we got this like thing.
Right. Where we make each other better all the time. Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one that's
eluded me. Yeah.
So that's why I write my own stuff.
That hurts my heart too much. But I understand
it's hard.
It is very hard, especially by yourself. It's a very
lonely
experience.
I have written and collaborated with people on things,
yes,
which I really enjoy.
Me too. And when it's working, it's obsessing. You can't stop.
It's great. Like the movie, I came up with the idea with my sister, Pat, who has nothing to do with this business.
Where is she?
She's in Albuquerque.
Oh, I've been there.
And so I would go down there and we came up with this idea for this story. And it's like, all right. So I made maybe two or three trips down there to her. And we basically came up with an outline. And it was paragraph by paragraph of like what was going to happen. And I just kept working on it in between. And I'd go visit her and then we tweak it. And I'd just go back and work and work and work. And then I ended up going to McDowell Colony with the outline. And then I just like banged out the whole script.
That's a very good
But that was kind of fun to have my sister.
It is.
I mean, after a couple hours, she'd be like, oh my God, my head hurts.
She
like,
or you?
She.
Oh, interesting.
Like, come on, you got to keep on.
No, you certainly have to go.
Like, yeah, you got to keep going. Writing is hard.
Well, that's the thing is that when the real, I had great partners and we did a lot of material and we got very close to being successful as writers. And, you know, you keep coming to that line and you keep getting knocked back. And how many times does that happen before you're like, wow, this does not feed my family all the time.
Right.
But as you're working on something, I always felt like the thing that I thought that was gold to be mined in there kept getting removed somewhere.
How's that? You know,
well, it's because as collaborators, there is a give and take that happens. And then when you run up against like, I don't understand what this means from your partner. And you're like, you don't see that is not only an awesome,
so
like
your collaborator
callback,
would remove it.
It feels like I would give and give and give at some point. And you're like, ooh, I wish I had held on to that. Cause that was kind of the quirk and the joy in this thing. And now it's filtered out. And so now it's sort of not what it
That sounds
be.
Like not a great collaboration.
Right, that's what I feel like, that the collaboration's kind of like, at the beginning, perhaps at the beginning it's the purest, when the thing comes out and we're both very, very happy with
Meaning
it. And
the
then
first
you hear,
draft.
Or the second draft, okay, wherever it is, like where the partners are happiest.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you start getting feedback from producers or from managers or from agents where you're actually now going to try to make this thing, and the feedback asks you to pivot, sometimes the pivoting is where you lose the joy.
Got it.
You know, where you're trying to fit it into someone else's. Again, that's why, especially in this day and age, like I wasn't doing this. I mean, I stopped doing this like 5 or 6 years ago, stopped writing. I've only been working as a filmmaker, camera guy,
actor.
Mm-hmm. But the writing, like I stopped doing it right before. Like you can really get stuff made now. Like I could really make something now. I can even team up tomorrow to get something made if the thing was perfectly right. But you also have to stick your head out financially, time. You know, there are these things that you have to weigh against being a commercial artist.
Right.
And an artist for the heart, you know. That's an interesting.
It's challenging. It's always a challenge for me.
Yeah, that is true.
Right now I'm like at a place where I'm just like, I'm just going to sort of leave room. I have to say no to some things.
Saying no is important.
And leave room for other things to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is tricky.
Right.
It's not easy.
Well, it's interesting you say that because the time that was probably most fruitful in my life where I was at my lowest, like what the hell is going to happen next, I kind of said, okay, from now on, I'm going to say yes to every single thing that comes my way. Like, I will not have a negative take on anything. I'll say yes and get everything done. And wouldn't you know, like, you can really dig into that well and find the energy to get a lot done.
Well, go back. I want to know about the low point. What happened?
Well,
where were you at?
You know,
we
in
all
my
go through them.
In my third, well, in my 20s, the acting world was very different.
Mm-hmm.
An actor could come to Los Angeles and make a bit of a strike and make a living by doing a pilot and a small movie and even do a play. And, you know, like there's a way to keep afloat. In my 30s, it seemed like the ease of making a living as an actor was just different. You had to be wildly successful.
And what changed in that?
Network television stopped being the only game in town. So fees got much eaten away at, you know, when you started doing cable outlet television or smaller and smaller movies. Mm-hmm. It was like, these things don't pay the bills. Like they pay the bills for this month.
That's something that also people, I mean, a lot of people that listen are in the business, but a lot of people don't really know.
Right.
the dirty secret.
Right.
Which is like cable doesn't pay what right. network does.
Right, right.
Even though network is considered not that sexy.
Right.
Right.
You want to be where it's
sexy, but it's sexy because they really it's sexy for them because they don't have to pay you that much to be there.
It's true. And also a lot of those networks are probably, you know, they also own studios that that own cable outlets that are producing content at a better rate for themselves. And also, I don't want to repeat the refrain, but there is 400 hours of television a week to watch. It's there is too much to absorb for most people. So of course the market is diluted.
Right.
It's harder.
But you're talking about before that, right?
I was talking about as it was switching over to that, stopped being like when an actor did a pilot in the 90s up until 2000, an actor could live for that, you know, for a good part of that year on that pilot fee.
Oh, wow. Okay. Got it.
And also like, I don't know if you know this, but the middle class in this country has been eroded to almost nothingness. There has been only rising in the cost of living, but not in what you're putting into your bank account. So, and also I'm a father and I'm married and my kid is a figure skater and she has a full, you know, a slate of things that need to get paid. And so you start making decisions again, like I say, as a commercial artist and as a business person and all of these things weigh
in. You're a working actor. That you're a working actor.
It's a blessing.
An entire career.
It's a blessing.
What are the odds? Well, what are the odds that I would be a director?
Oh, I know. Well,
and a female director on top. The odds are so against us.
It's true. And it's very hard to, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine. We were watching, oh God, I forget. The amount of actors in this world that will never have an agent, the amount of actors in this world that will never get into SAG, you take for granted. That's a very large number. Mm. And it's a catch-22. You have to have experience to get into SAG, and you have to have a SAG membership in order to gain experience. These are things that can really hurt your brain when you're trying to get, and so you have to be a little bit fortunate.
I think we have a caller.
That's impossible.
We do. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, what's up? What's going on? It's you.
This is Robert Kelly, a.k.a. Bam Bam.
Oh, my God. That guy is so famous.
So we miss you. We wish you were here right now. What are you doing right this moment? Are you smoking a cigar?
Well, no, I'm actually outside my backyard peeing on the fence.
Oh, my God.
I thought this was God's honest truth.
Is it? You're peeing away from the shed, I hope.
I'm actually protecting my child. I'm peeing so that other animals know that this is my territory.
I appreciate
that. I'm protecting my son.
Does your, like, pee leave brown spots on the lawn?
No, that's females.
Oh.
You're a good father, Bob.
My shed right now is loaded with four guys, all smoking cigars.
Nice.
I got to step out and make a phone call. So
Rosemary brought the producer here some cigars from her husband, and she's going to take some back. There's a whole cigar
swapping. There's a whole, like, monster humidor here where we are in the studio.
Really? What kind of cigars are there?
Oh, dude, I don't know. We'd have to, like, Jeremy
He's
would
got,
have to
Machu,
tell us.
Machu Picchu.
That's not a cigar.
No, I'm not schooled in it, but you'll meet Nestor. You'll meet Nestor one of these days, because every time I see you at your Instagram with a cigar, I think of my husband. And then I see your little kid, like, washing the car, and I'm like, already, you're smoking a cigar and your kid's washing the car. What the fuck is up with that?
That is called the American dream is what that is. That is the American dream.
Raising a labor force out there in Westchester.
That's right. I'm bringing back. Forget about Trump. I'm bringing America back. One child labor at a time. Not from other countries. From this country. That's where we went wrong. We stopped using our kids to do all.
Finally, Irish American labor coming right out of New York.
Finally, that's funny. So we were talking about you a little bit ago because we were talking about you, you know, Bam and Rehab, you and John and your storyline and how you got this great storyline on sex and drugs and rock and roll. And I just wanted to tell you, because I just told John, I mean, I think you guys are amazing together. You're funny. You break my heart. You're like, it's interesting. And I just want to say there was one day when we were shooting when, you know, we were doing the last episode and the crew was exhausted and everyone's kind of cranky and we're in a small space and we didn't really have the scene down. It was kind of being rewritten and crazy. And I just want to say you and John.
Mostly Bobby. Come on. This was Bobby made a gift for the cast.
For the crew. You fucking seized the moment and put on a show and you had all of us cracking up.
Yeah, Bobby really went off crazy and made everyone laugh for about, I think, 10 minutes in a 3-minute scene.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you something. I've never, you know, you always hear about, like, guys hooking up and getting together and, you know, and having some type of chemistry. Me and, you understand, me and Dennis in the show, we were supposed to be best friends.
Yeah. From the pilot episode, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the pilot episode is me and Dennis. And then something happened when they got picked up. Me and Johnny L's rehab. We did a scene together, and we just started fucking off.
Yeah, that was the 7th episode of the first season. Remember?
Yeah.
I remember,
we could hear Leary just cracking up.
Yeah.
And Serpico, they were just dying, and they kept running in, going, dude, do that again. Do that. Try this. Dude. And we were like, all right. And we just kept doing stuff, and there was just something between me and that dude you're sitting next to right now that... I've never had anybody.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we owe it all. Yeah. Well, we don't owe it all because it's you and me. But young Jack Leary came up with Beast Corps, didn't he?
That's right. They didn't have the episodes.
That's right.
And he came up with a storyline, and him and Leary wrote the storyline together for Beast Corps, and that's when me and you started. I remember it started when they were dressing us for one of the episodes, and we turned into drag queens. We were like, I want like a red stripe across my face. and then John was like, you should have one braid coming out of the middle of your head. Just like, that's it. That's the only piece of hair you have is just in the
one
like,
chunky
right
braid.
Oh my God. One of my jobs once, like I got out of rehab. For real? I had this job. Do you remember, like, they used to have these knit caps and with a long ponytail, like, sewed on the back of it. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
You remember those, right, Bobby? Oh, you just took a puff, right?
No.
I know that sound from my husband. It's like a little puff pause.
I just love when someone goes, I had this job after rehab. Jobs after rehab are the fucking craziest, greatest jobs ever. I had one. I used to make styrofoam balls for Christmas time.
Oh, okay, for ornaments. There,
and I had a mentally challenged guy was my boss. And it was me and this guy. And he would yell at me all day because I kept fucking up. He'd make the perfect styrofoam ball. And I would just fuck it up all the time. And
were you sanding it? You're sanding them down?
No, you had to take a chunk of styrofoam, a square chunk, and then you had to grind it into a half a ball.
And measure it and put it up against another half a ball.
You handed it to there was a little old Mexican lady that sat there with glue, and we'd hand her a box of half a balls, and she would glue them together.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was the same with the ponytails. I got paid by the piece, and there was a room full of
Ponytail hat?
We were attaching the fake ponytails to the knit caps, and there was a room full. It was an apartment on the Upper West Side, and there was a room full of Mexican women and me.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the common denominator here? Oh, it's a rehab job.
Rehab
job.
Well, not Mexican women.
No.
I saved enough money to buy a moped.
You lucky. And, you're rich.
But I couldn't get a good moped. I had to get the moped with the pedals. Remember the one that had, like, bike pedals?
Yeah, well, that was the original moped.
Yeah, that was right.
I wanted the moped at that time. I wanted, like, a Vespa.
Right, you wanted a
little. Yeah. Yeah. So I got the one with the pedals. And I remember I was driving it to an AA meeting, and I was so proud. And I was doing so well. And then it broke on the way to the meeting. And I almost drank.
Did you pedal it there finally, or could you? It was just not even operable. No,
I left it at a gas station, and then the next day they called me, and somebody had left it outside. It fell over, and it broke the engine block.
Oh.
And I remember I was crying, hanging out the window. I was going to kill myself. I swear to God, I was hanging out the window crying, and my mother came in, and she goes, "What are you doing?" I go, I don't want to live. I can't do it. And she goes, "Bobby, we live on the first floor. you're just going to get hurt."
Oh, you poor bastard. You couldn't even kill yourself right. We're on the 19th floor of an L.A. building right now. I don't think I've ever seen that.
In L.A.? Are you sure you're in L.A.?
Yeah, I told the guy. I feel like we're in New York.
Yeah, well, I didn't last long at my job. I only went for 2 days. I couldn't handle it. I didn't get a moped.
Did you stay with your boss for a long time, Bob?
I did not. I actually wanted, after the moped, I just couldn't go back. I couldn't go back. I actually got a job at a lumber store stacking lumber. But it wasn't it was called the Outlet Lumber Store. So we got all the crooked lumber.
So you couldn't stack it.
So you couldn't stack it. So all they did was stack lumber all day. But it was crooked. So it was just a never-ending fucking...
You piled lumber.
It was maniacal.
You couldn't even pile it because it wasn't straight. It was like crooked wood.
That was terrible.
I had to pick balls off of a driving range. In one of those carts, but when it rained, this is what made me quit. When it rained, you couldn't drive the picker cart, so you had to go out there in the mud in the rain and pick them by hand. Oh, that was miserable.
Trying to hit you with balls?
No. After about a half hour, I asked them to stop for sure. No, there was a whole thing with me. They were on the side of the young laborer in Encino. They stopped people from hitting the balls.
You know, in Manhattan at Chelsea Piers, they have the driving range.
Yeah.
And it just shoot balls out into the Hudson, but it's all, you know, it's got these big King Kong.
Yeah, that you, it catches you.
And on to the left and the right are these, you know, $10 billion yachts.
Oh, my God.
So me and my friends used to go there, and we used to just try to hit the yachts.
This is a kid from Medford. He's
that's
a toughie.
Crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. Do you know that on my third television directing job was at Chelsea Piers. It was Law and Order.
Oh, my. And the original?
The original. And as I was walking to work, you know, I got off and I was walking past. And who was playing hockey right there?
D-Rock.
Dennis Leary was playing hockey. And I was so obsessed with Rescue Me at that time. And right. I took it as an omen. I'm like, fuck. And I stood there and I watched him play with a bunch of guys. And I'm like, I've got to fucking work with that guy.
Look at that, Bobby. Now she's done 5 episodes with she did 3 Rescue Me's and 2 SDRRs. And you know,
life is good. And then I get to hang out with you guys.
She did one of the final, the final episode of Good Wife.
No, not the final one. Third to final one. No, but I did.
Don't forget one of my favorite shows.
Which?
Jessica Jones.
Oh, yeah. Of course, Jessica Jones. Yeah, season 2. So are you guys excited for June 30th when Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll comes back?
I'm excited I'm excited for getting the cast back together. Getting the band back together.
Oh, yeah.
Next week.
The ATX Festival. You know, I'm going down there for something unrelated.
You'll come and see us.
Yeah, I'm going to come see you guys. Bobby, you're going to be there too, right?
Yes, I am. I'm going to be smoking cigars on 6th.
Oh shit! I'm gonna bring you one.
To this guitar. Guitar. Go to the cigar shop that Bobby tells you to.
Oh really?
And he'll talk to you, the guy. They don't make them there, right, Bob?
They do.
They do.
Oh.
Is that the place they give you free water or something like that?
They give you not free water. It's a very hipster place, and you get a real big attitude when you walk in.
Yeah, sneers.
All right, you'll help me pick one out for, and I'll bring one home to my husband.
Right, Horace.
Yes,
right. What's his name?
Nestor. That's okay.
See?
People say all kinds of stuff. All right, cool. But I'm really, really happy that you called, and I really miss you, and I love working with you, and I just can't even believe that you called in to talk to us. Of course, your buddy John. People got to watch you guys because it's amazing what you guys, your chemistry is awesome.
John Ailes.
Robert
is
Kelly.
One of the funniest guys.
I just had to follow Bobby's lead. Stop that. You're the funny guy. I'm the guy with the puns. Oh, no, you're the...
You're out of your, I'm the guy with the puns. I say, oh my God, and I do puns.
But he says, listen, oh my God.
I tell you, I'm not even kidding. When we cast the show and they were telling me who the cast was, they were like Liz Gillies. I was like, oh, that's cool. John Corbett. Oh, that's great. Elaine. I was like, oh, cool. That's cool. I remember her. And then they said John Ailes. And I went, oh my God, the Buddy Professor. I was so excited to work with John Ailes.
Oh, that's awesome.
More than fucking John Corbett.
That's a guy with taste.
Everybody was whipped out about John Corbett. I was like, no, the lunatic dude from the crazy fucking lunatic, hilarious guy from Nutty Professor.
You mean Dave Chappelle?
Dumb.
Oh, right.
But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about like collaboration and that's the fact that like minds and you're attracted to people that like, that do what you like and that think and that inspire you. At the end of the day, you want to be inspired by people. You know what I mean? You can like people's work, but unless it really, you know, it you kind of feed off each other. And that's what you guys do together. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch.
We hope
well,
we
Johnny
get to do more.
Is a great actor too, though, because he actually helped me out a lot with, I mean, even reading a call sheet. The first year, I was like, where
the first
am I?
Year, this year.
This year. But no, I didn't even know that we got a pay bump until a week ago.
Yeah, literally, he didn't. Anyway,
that's cute. That's sweet.
Like, what's overtime? Oh, this is the guy who plays Louis's brother, by the way. This is the guy who invented Bang Bang with Louis C.K. on the... I mean, this is a serious dude who didn't know how to read a call sheet. So, look, sweet. With the it's best sweet. Of them. With the best of them.
It's very sweet. That's pretty cute, actually. I like that.
I love you guys, and I love working with you, too. I remember one day I was actually really mad, and you came over and held my hand.
Oh, man. It broke my heart. It was something that you were playing the drums and it's very tricky. The playback is tricky and the click track and there's so many elements that go into stuff that people don't realize how many things there are to coordinate. And what happens, just so you know, that particular day is, you know, we plan and prep and we're like, okay, we know we're going to do this amount of music and we kind of have a plan what we're going to shoot. And then, you know, Dennis is like, oh, no, we're doing the whole song. We're like, what? Like, we're doing the whole song? What? That's like 4 or 5 minutes. Holy shit. So we all start scrambling. And then something happened with, like, you couldn't hear shit, Bobby. And then, like, and anything happens to an actor, and I am, like, I'm so defeated. I just, it breaks my heart. Because you guys are so
well, Bobby
your
puts in. I think out of anyone in the cast, I definitely put in a little. I mean, I put in the work to learn how to play the bass. But if anyone who understands rock music, you'll understand that playing the bass is so much easier than taking on the drums as a new instrument. And Bobby's taken it on to the point where he's a proficient drummer now, and he actually has to learn these songs because his whole body is in the shot playing these songs. So
that's
he
right.
learns the song.
That's right.
And it can be very frustrating if something messes it up.
It was weird because they muffle the drums and then they're like, okay, I don't know where you're coming. And then you can't hear the song. And then it's like, all right, you take his kick pedal away too.
I remember that.
I spent, you know how many hours I spent
learning that
my
kick
skin pedal. And then it's like, yeah, take his kick pedal away. Yeah, it's like juggling with no balls. So
no, it's true. No, and it's also, I think sometimes people, like, I think sometimes what it's not understood how much prep you guys do to show up, especially when you've got instruments, plus you've got to act, plus the scene that we were shooting that we're talking about was really about, I'm not going to give any storylines away, but there was emotions going on. So it wasn't just about the music. It wasn't just about having fun playing.
That's the many brains we have to put on. In this case, it's a fun challenge, right, Bob? I mean, we're always thinking about it. An actual activity as well as trying to be in the work, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. But it actually worked out. Me, because the scene that we had, the scene led into me being fucking pissed.
That's right.
So it literally made me, it's probably the best work I've ever done, really being pissed.
But that's what you got to do. You got to use reality and understand that's why things happen and you use it and you just bring it and whatever the mood is, even if it was a comedic scene later, you got to use that energy. This is the way it goes. But sometimes people get thrown off by moving a chair a few inches. It can really throw somebody off.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I remember you came up and you held my hand. And that was, I was, it literally brought me back. It was like, okay, okay, thank you. Thank you. I was like, I was, it brought me back down to like, okay, I get it. So
good. I'm so happy. Oh, thank you for taking, for letting me do that. Cause you could have been like, fuck you, bitch, get away from me. And you know, I would have just scrambled away and just like kept checking in. So I would have found another way. So thanks for letting me just take your hand and making it easy on me.
All right, listen, I got to go back to these alpha males sitting in my shed right now.
Yeah.
Smoking.
Bobby built this shed cigars. Himself with his own hands.
We'll look forward to the Instagram picture.
Yeah, follow Bobby. Right now, is it Robert Kelly Live or just Robert Kelly?
Robert Kelly Live on Instagram, and we're eating potato chips. They're hot dog flavored potato chips.
I just tried a pickle flavored one the other day. It sucked.
Hot dog flavored potato chips.
You know what they taste like, Bob? They taste like what Scratch and Sniff smelled like.
Well, Scratch and Sniff to you and Scratch and Sniff to me are two different things.
You would have eaten those stickers?
Well.
I don't want to know about your Scratch and Sniff, okay?
Ba-boom.
They used to call me Smell My Finger in high school.
Oh, God.
I'll be here all week.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
tip
my
your
God.
Waiters.
Oh,
it
my
is
God.
Thursday night.
Oh, my
oh,
God.
Oh, no, it's Wednesday.
No, all right, listen, I love you guys.
Love you, Bob.
I will see you in Austin next week.
Yes.
That's right.
And we'll hang and we'll smoke cigars and we'll have some laughs.
That's great.
Love you. Thank you so much.
Love you, Bob.
I love you too. Love you too. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye. That's a talent. That is a talent. Oh, and
he's
and
awesome,
for
man.
Your audience who hasn't checked out Bobby Kelly's special, he did a one-hour special last year that's on his website, robertkellylive.com, I think, that you should go buy for $5 or something.
He's hilarious.
He's hilarious. And every single time I've seen him do stand-up, I mean, every time, and I've seen him 6 or 7 times, he commands that room like almost like no one else I've ever seen, and he takes over. The place goes wild, cold room, hot room, whatever. He is hilarious, hilarious.
We're lucky we get to work with him.
That's true.
And he's your big collaborator.
He is our, that is true. As an acting partner, I definitely have that.
I know.
Hey, Bobby, you should write 15 minutes of comedy for me. I'll go open for you.
Oh, there you go.
Just write a quick 15 minutes and give me 10 years of experience so that I don't bomb anymore.
Maybe there's a little open mic in Austin.
I'll throw up. No, I'm not into stand-up. That's not my thing.
Well, I wanted to ask you one more thing. We have only a couple of minutes left.
Good.
One of the things I wanted to ask you was, you know, last year, I believe you guys went to Comic-Con.
Oh, my God, yeah.
What was that like?
Funny you asked that. I've been to Comic-Con a few times.
Okay.
Because I am the creative director of the Stan Winston School.
Oh yeah, tell online, me about that.
Which is an online library, a school for creature creation, monster making, makeup effects, blah 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 blah. Anyway, we partnered up with a few companies, a few monster shops, and a few online magazines. I don't even want to give them the props because they made me so crazy, but. We did a couple of documentaries taking these giant walk-around creatures to Comic-Con and kind of storming San Diego with a team of puppeteers and these really giant beasts. Wow. One was a walking robot that was 10 feet tall that was really beautiful.
Wow.
And we did it with Legacy Effects, and which is Stan Winston's old artist's shop. They now make Iron Man and Avatar and all the movies that are happening right now, Pacific Rim. Anyway, the reason I'm telling you this is because I kind of went as a grunt and a filmmaker to finish off documentaries that I was making for Stan Winston's school with these creatures at Comic-Con, and always experienced kind of the fringes of Comic-Con and how cool that city gets transformed during the week of Comic-Con, and it really injects the city with a lot of life and excitement.
But those, you were out with these like creatures.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody's inside the creature.
There's one puppeteer in the robot. There's one kind of suit driver.
Okay.
He had to carry about 200 pounds of stuff on him. It was very
all day. No.
In shifts, but that creature stayed, that robot stayed alive a lot. The second year we did something called the giant creature, the Lupo? I forget what we called it. There's a documentary on stanwinstonschool.com. If you want to go to our YouTube channel, you can check it out. It's a beautiful documentary on how we built these things, but the creature that we made the second year was puppeteered by 4 people inside and about 3 or 4 radio puppeteers outside. And it had, we had mechanics with us and animatronics guys and people who understood fur and how to work with these things. And we all stayed together and drank together, ate together, slept together, walked. I mean, you know, it's a pretty tight crew. That's amazing. So those were really fun experiences. And they were week long each time for Comic-Con. But we kind of the first year got kicked out of Comic-Con proper. Like we were on the grounds and the robot overtook a good portion of the place. And they asked us to leave. So we had to leave. This time with the cast, I would say I've never experienced anything like it. I mean, we did so many different things in so short a period of time. Just a couple of days kind of storming San Diego with the help of FX, with the help of Fox, with the help of Comic-Con itself. And we really saw some fun things. Really great parties, really cool interview experiences. Wow. We got to do some cool screenings.
Wow.
That's Comic-Con's amazing. A really fun experience. If you haven't been, if you like the world of the con.
No, I'm gonna be directing a Walking Dead episode.
Whoa. And they're the biggest thing at Comic-Con.
Well, and they're going to be going, and I'm going to be left in Atlanta. And I'm like, I really need to find a way to sneak over with them.
And
somehow.
Go with them. Well, they will have,
the
I'll tell you,
episode.
You got to go.
I know.
They have carte blanche. I mean, they must be, them and Game of Thrones, like they are the two, they're the big kahunas there.
It'd be so much fun.
The hotel hallways and elevators are literally laminated with their faces.
I mean,
bigger than... You have to go. Buildings are wrapped in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I don't care.
There.
I get my own ticket. I just go. I just go.
No, you just you could just carry somebody's ego.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I do it all the time.
Seriously, you get. There's gonna be a big crowd following them along, and you could be part of their team. You're going.
That's
the director.
I'm going. But I'll see.
Congratulations.
You next week in
that's
Austin.
So huge.
Oh, it's fun. I'm really, really happy. I'm happy.
I'm glad. So. Well, say hi to Greg Nicotero.
I will.
He is an old Stan Winston protege, by the way. That's
no,
a nice
I definitely
little.
Will.
And his partner, Howard Berger, has done a couple of courses for us. I think they're both Oscar winners. I know Howard is. I'm almost positive Greg is, but now Greg's multi-Emmy, multi-Golden Globe winner.
He directs Walking Dead. He does an amazing job.
Thing.
He's the executive producer. Amazing.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, one of the great Jaws aficionados in the world. He is the biggest Jaws fan that you will ever meet, Greg Nicotero.
That's a good, that's a little good insider information.
They built a life-size, the moment where the three men are at the back of the orca looking for what the hell did he just, I shot it this many times, it's still alive kind of look.
Yeah.
He built three life-size, hyper-realistic likenesses of the three men at the back of the boat, which is beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, check it out. Greg's
that's so cool.
All from the bottom of his heart. Like he paid the money to get it done with all his, this is months and months and months of work of his staff.
Oh, I can't wait to work with him.
Yeah, he's
I get
the best.
To work with him.
He's
how crazy is that?
Greg Nicotero.
Oh man, I could go on talking to you forever, but
I know.
We have to be done.
We're
so
done.
Tell people where they can find your work, your everything.
The things that I'm most proud of are Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll starting June 30th on FX Thursday nights at 10.
Mm-hmm.
You can see some of my photography at johnales.com, alias. I'm jackassdog at Instagram.
And Twitter?
I am John Ailes. I am John Ailes on Twitter.
Great.
I'm not very good at Twitter, but I'm better at Instagram because I like pictures.
Yep.
I'll follow you.
Me too.
I follow Rosemary and she does some really cool stuff and she lets you know what's going on in her work life and her fun life.
No, it's fun. I mean, I just want people to subscribe, review, and like get into the podcast thing. And yeah, on Instagram and Twitter at Rosemary Directs.
See?
And I just want to thank everybody for listening. And John Ailes, it's been like, feels like a 5-minute conversation. Thank
How long
you
was
so
that?
Much. It was an hour.
That's a long time.
So I just want to thank you. And I want to thank everybody for helping us collaborate tonight just by listening.
Yeah.
Till the next time. Thank you.
Come on, people. It's time to live it up.